This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Live from downtown San Francisco, this is 95.7 The Game.
We're talking about Warriors this week alongside Sam Lubman. This is Dan Devone. The night after Jake Paul did whatever it is that he did to Mike Tyson, the Warriors hang on in a very bizarre, ugly, I don't even know if that I want to classify it as basketball in the last quarter and a half. They went at 123 to 118, and Sammy, this team is 10-2. They are just a half game back of OKC, a team that they beat earlier this year. Just your thoughts, first of all, on the game last night, and obviously we'll get into the Warriors. How are you this morning?
Yeah, no, Warriors did a better job of holding on than Mike Tyson did last night. And by the way, I watched 0 seconds of that fight.
Well, I had to. It was guilty pleasure, and it was one of the saddest things I've seen.
I know we're Warriors this week, and we'll definitely be talking a lot of Warriors today, but maybe we'll throw some. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on that debacle at Dallas. That was taking place at Dallas, right?
The Jerry Jones world.
Yeah, the debacle at Dallas. So maybe we can talk about that at some point this show. I didn't pay any attention to it because, yeah, I was watching Warriors-Grizzlies last night. And it was – that was probably the – as much of a blowout as a 5-point win can be, which is a weird thing to say. I mean, damn, the Grizzlies finished the game on a 16-6 run the final 2 minutes, built on the back of probably every single free throw that franchise has ever taken ever. Yeah, you could see that the frustration in Steve Kerr afterwards that he had with the officiating in the last quarter there.
Disgusting.
Oh, my God. It was just like, I know I'm a weirdo. I like going to see the refs. Said no one ever. But, yeah, I mean, that was a game the first...
Whoa. Let's just stop right there. What is it that you're looking for in refereeing? Why do you enjoy the refs?
If it gets to the point where, like last night, where every single play seems to lead to a whistle and it's a blowout on a Friday night, like, come on, guys. Like, let's let them play here a little bit. I was watching the game with my girlfriend, Allie, last night. And every single time, she's just losing her mind over the stoppages every single time.
So when you say you go to see the referees, it's not because you're a fan. You sort of put them under the microscope.
Well, no, yeah. It's just, well, to be honest, Dan, no one goes to see the referees. Like, that's the whole point. Like,
which is why I stopped you mid-sentence.
Yeah, well, I was trying to make a joke that just failed to land there properly.
Oh, right.
That's a great start. No, but like... Yeah, no one wants to go see the referees. That's the thing. No one is going to these games to see the refs do whatever it is that the refs do. They want to see these guys play. And unfortunately, it ends up overshadowing what was, you know, not the most incredible game for the Warriors. But the Warriors are 10-2. They're looking really good while they're doing it. And what's crazy is, you know, Draymond Green got thrown out of that game last night. I don't think anyone even really cares. Like, that just shows how far things have gone with Draymond. So
it's always a fun game.
Exactly.
There's a lot to unpack in what was sort of a ho-hum, I think, a game that the Warriors pretty much dominated throughout. 123-118. There's the Emirates NBA Cup, which I think motivated a lot of what it is that we saw towards the end of the game with the point differential that certainly was on the mind of Memphis. We can talk about that. We do have to discuss Draymond Green and getting tossed from yet another basketball game. Steph Curry had a subpar contest, yet the Warriors continued to win, and they didn't need their superstar last night. But I do want to start with the NBA Cup, because I think a lot of what it is that you talked about, that 16-6 finish on the part of Memphis, is motivated by the point differential, which is taken into account in trying to get to an NBA Cup. First of all, your general thoughts on the Emirates. Let's not forget the sponsor, the Emirates NBA. By the way, have you ever flown Emirates?
I have not, but I've heard it's one of the better.
So I have not flown it either, but I have a friend of mine in New York who flew it internationally. I want to say he went to Germany. And he goes, Dan, he flew first class because his company put him up. And he's like, this thing was bigger than my studio in New York City. It had like a bed. He's like, I didn't want to leave. Like we landed and I didn't want to get out of bed. He's like, it had my own little personal bathroom. People were serving me
sounds
drinks.
Like a flying hotel.
He's like, first class in Emirates Airline is real deal. And so obviously, you know, they got the money to sponsor something like that of the NBA Cup. But just sort of your thoughts on the NBA Cup and what it is that we witnessed last night with the point differential and so on and so forth as everybody tries to make their way to Las Vegas.
To be honest, I'm kind of whatever on the NBA Cup. Like, I'm not going to – like, last year the Warriors, they didn't even get to the Final Eight in Las Vegas, and I really just did not care. There's only one championship that I think truly matters in the NBA. And I know they try to put some incentives on the NBA Cup to make the players care about it, but a couple extra million here or there for a lot of these guys doesn't really matter. And to be honest, I don't really care if, you know, Andrew Wiggins makes an extra $1 million because the Warriors win the NBA Cup this year. It's nothing against Andrew Wiggins, but just, you know, these guys getting a little bit more money in their wallets does nothing for me. You know, I don't think you're raising any banners. No one's wearing any of the T-shirts. There's not going to be any parade down Market Street to celebrate any sort of NBA Cup title there. It just seems, Dan, like every conversation about the NBA Cup, it just feels like it's centered around why are we doing this and what can we do to make it better? Yeah. And I feel like that's not a good sign if that's kind of where we're at. I mean, it's the second year, so maybe the how can we make it better conversation does make a little sense, but if that's all we're really talking about it, it's just, do we really need it, I guess, is kind of where I'm at.
Well, I could tell you that the NBA would probably tell you that we're trying to capture some interest at this part of the season to incentivize players when there could be a little bit lag, right? You get the NFL going on before this becomes the complete focus on the NBA. As, you know, it's a long season. We're talking all the way till summer until we decide a champion.
First week of April is when the
so I think
ends.
A lot of this was just incentivizes how do we provide more entertainment for this time of the season. What they miss on is that I thought last year was I bought in on the Tuesday and Friday nights and the courts looking different. And
I do
was,
like the different courts, some of them.
Yeah, and you could see that
others.
The players were playing with some juice. Draymond was certainly into it a year ago, and you could see Memphis doing what it is that they did last night. So it works on that level. I think things looked really anticlimactic last year. Like, okay, so you finally get to the championship. The Lakers win the thing, and it's like, did that really land with anybody?
Well, I think that was probably what the NBA would have wanted, just to be able to say that, you know, LeBron James won the first NBA Cup. I think maybe that gives it some sort of legitimacy. I do think the NBA Cup, who was really good for, was Tyrese Halliburton and the Pacers last year. That really was kind of a big coming out party for him last year. In that sense, you know, you allow kind of guys to kind of take that step from really good to, you know, much more noticeable players.
Put them on the map, certainly.
Yeah, put some sports guys like, I mean, Halliburton, I think, was on the map. I don't want to say that it was putting Halliburton on the map, because I do think, you know, he was kind of on the map before, but his presence on that map last year definitely elevated. So, yeah, if you want to use the NBA Cup as a way to, you know, young players kind of elevating their profile around the league, like, yeah, I'll listen to that theory at least.
Well, you talk about the young players, and certainly Tyrese Halliburton was able to take advantage. And it wasn't necessarily about Halliburton, a younger player, but I think the way Indiana was playing with the ball movement and sort of, you know, just five out. And it was this new style. Well, it wasn't new, but it was something that Indiana had really cultivated and really was able to demonstrate center stage thanks to the NBA Cup. So when you highlight the younger players, here's why I don't want the Warriors to have anything to do with this thing. The last thing they need is an extra game, playing in that NBA championship game, which is going to be an intense game, right? You do not need that. If the focus on this team, and the further they go along, and the more we buy in and drink the Kool-Aid that this thing is real, and we're now 12 games in, this team is 10-2, and you start thinking about playoffs, first round, second round, Western Conference Finals, which sounded like a pipe dream at the beginning of the season, becomes very, very real with every passing game. The last thing I want, Sammy, is for soon-to-be 37-year-old Steph Curry and a 36-year-old Draymond Green to be playing in an extra, quote-unquote, championship game.
Especially when those stats don't even matter.
No, either. The game doesn't matter. And so when you're talking about load management, when you're talking about resting, all of this is eyeing so that he has fresh legs for when? The end of the season and making your run towards the postseason. I do not want to see a meaningless championship game that those two have to be involved in.
No, and I think you use that word meaningless, and I think that's a good word for it, because at the end of the day, like, the cup title does kind of feel meaningless, really, because, like I said, what do you get if you win? You get to jump around, yay, you know, shout out House of Pain, and say that you won something. Yeah, they'll probably sell t-shirts for it, so if you want to get a t-shirt that says NBA Cup Champs, you know, you can get that. You get to see your favorite basketball player get a little bit richer. Okay, if that does something for you. But outside of that, I mean, what are you getting? Like, how is the Lakers franchise any better, any richer, any more, you know, amazing with that NBA Cup win last year? You know, no one's talking about, you know, the NBA Cup titles when it comes to the Lakers. You know, that's not what the Lakers do. So it's how do you make that NBA Cup title more spicy? How do you make it something that you absolutely want to have? And my thought for that, Dan, if you win the NBA Cup, you get an automatic top six seed in the playoffs. That's how I think you incentivize it. It gets you out of that play-in game. You get to, you know, maybe you make it all the way top four seed so you can get them a home series, really add some incentive to it. But I think the winner of the NBA Cup gets a top six seed no matter what, and there you go. That's how you make the NBA Cup have a little bit more meaning.
Here's the issue with that. And I point towards the Eastern Conference, where I want to say the third seed right now is a sub-500 team. If you were to do that and somebody's to take the pipe and is not very good in the latter part of the season and is 15
that
games
would be
under 500.
You're true. Yeah, it's...
Well, maybe the Eastern Conference...
How about this addendum then? So you get an automatic top six seed, but you got to have a record above 500.
Well... The more we fine-tune this thing, how about we just get rid of it altogether?
Well, yeah, that's kind of what it ends up coming down to, is like, what are we doing then at this point? It's just, we're rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. Like, it's just, it gets to a point where, okay, if we're not going to do that, then it just becomes a pointless in-season thing with an extra game that doesn't even matter. And then you're just playing for pride, which, hey, if pride is all you need to get juiced up about the NBA Cup, more power to you. It's just not enough for me. So, it's cool that the Warriors won last night on the fancy floor. By the way, have you seen all the other floors that the NBA
Celtics
teams are doing?
Did you see the Celtics green?
The Celtics green. Some of them are obviously better than others. The ones I don't like are the ones that are like the blood red or the bright yellow. Like, that's just a little
Celtics
much.
Celtics green was pretty bad, man. Celtics green was like they were playing in a video game. It was so weird.
Yeah, I was watching the Knicks Sixers the other night, and that one looked like they were playing in a swimming pool. Because with the blue court there. So the different color courts, some of them work. I think the gray patterns definitely work.
By the way, Cat, double headbutt there, my man, Jersey Kent. I know he's a Knicks guy. Double headbutt too. I think he took out Joel Embiid, and there was another 76 that he got in that headbutt.
Oh, yeah, Kelly Oubre.
Kelly Oubre.
It's a two for one.
Yeah. Warrior legend, loved Kelly Oubre.
Loved every minute of it.
Oh, man, the amount of shows that guy used to drive. Kelly Oubre.
Still the best-dressed guy in the NBA. Him or Westbrook?
Oh, yeah, I'll give that one.
So, yeah, I think the NBA Cup, I just, in all honesty, I think that what it boils down to, I think the last thing you want to see when your two best stars are on the wrong side at 30, 35, that you don't want to play another high-intensity basketball game. Every single minute, every second, let alone every game, counts when it comes to load management and having these guys at an optimal level at the most important part of the season, that being the postseason for the Golden State Warriors. But the Warriors do come up winners in what was just really an ugly game in the latter
part. Really quick, Dan, before we move on, I mentioned my six-seed plan. Last year, just going off last year's standings, the Pacers, who won the NBA Cup, and the Suns were your sixth seed. The Pacers had a 573 winning percentage, and the Suns had a 598 winning percentage. So, you know, if you have the mandate, you keep your record above 500, you get an automatic sixth seed. You know, I think that it's a little bit of legit there. I mean, if you, you know, because that's the difference from taking you out of, you know, maybe that 9-10 game into that sixth seed. So I think that's how you can maybe incentivize it.
Well, you bring up an interesting point, and sort of as it relates to the NBA right now, and there's a lot of talk about, as I mentioned, the East, which is going to have, well, if the season were to end today, I don't know how this is going to play out towards the end of the year, but you got teams like Atlanta, Charlotte, for crying out loud, is in that hunt. A lot of sub-500 teams that are going to get into the postseason, not only get into the postseason, but get in as high seeds. Where are you at of just a 1 through 16 in the hell with the conferences?
I don't know. I don't know if I'm ready to go there yet. I mean, even last year, Dan, I mean, you had 8 teams in the Eastern Conference finish with seasons with records above 500. In the Western Conference, you had 11 teams finish with a record of 500 or better. The Rockets at 41-41, bringing up the rear there, they were on the outside looking in of the play-in game, of the play-in game bracket there. So as far as the 1 to 16, just mass seeding there, it's probably going to be happening at some point. It's just, I mean, remember when divisions mattered in the NBA? No one cares about divisions anymore. You just go right to the conference standings now. I do think it's only a matter of time before they just say to hell with the conferences and just go 1 through 16. I don't think I'm ready to go there yet, but I'll admit that it's probably...
Well, a lot of it has to do with the logistics of travel, right?
Well, so, I assume, yeah, if you do away with conferences, I mean, obviously you're playing some teams less, so you probably won't be playing the Lakers 4 times a year. You'll probably have to be playing, you know, Eastern Conference teams a little bit more, or maybe you do just keep the, you know, what, you know, the home and homes there. Maybe you have to change the schedule up a little bit as well too. I doubt the NBA would actually reduce games though, so there would be some logistical hurdles they would have to clear.
You're not in favor of the baseball series. I think that's gross.
No, I mean, it was weird last week when we had the back-to-backs against the Pelicans.
Yeah,
I don't like this. I remember Steve Kerr said this a few years ago during the, the 2021 season that started at Christmas. And there was a lot of baseball series during that season because of COVID travels and stuff like that. They kind of wanted to pack as many games into, you know, as possible. And Kerr had a great line. He kind of talked about how he didn't like it because when NBA teams come to town, it's a chance to see other stars.
Yeah.
So you have a team like, you know, I'll just use the Pelicans as an example since they were just here. You know, they come to town, and if, let's just say, Zion was hurt for whatever reason, those are your two Pelicans games. They're not going to come back for the rest of the season, and because Zion was out that week, or it could be some just Zion had a cold that week. You don't get to see Zion play at all that year.
Wait.
So, I'm using this as an example.
Yeah. No, I'm just, I find it amazing that Zion was hurt. Seriously?
I know. I mean, this could be applicable to anything. You know, what if it's a 2-game set against the Lakers and LeBron James isn't active that night or that week? So now that's, if you're trying to see Steph and LeBron face off at Chase Center, you don't get to see that anymore because all the games were packed into 1 week. And that's something that Kerr brought up that year. And that made a lot of sense. Like, yeah, like you want to see other guys around the league. You want to see these other superstars, and the baseball series does kind of put you at risk of not being able to get that.
And what's the one team that has not had the benefit or the luxury of playing in a baseball, quote-unquote, baseball series? In other words, traveling to, say, Memphis and staying there for 2 days, that being the Golden State Warriors. Have never, ever been able to do that. And that's because everybody wants to see Steph. He's got to move on to the next city. All right, we're going to open up the phone lines early. 888-957-9570. That's 888-957-9570. Let's start things out in Bayview. Just give me Jimmy wants to talk about the NBA Cup. What's up, Jim?
Hey guys, morning this Saturday. Thanks for taking my call. The NBA Cup, as you guys were saying, has no relevance towards what's happening later in the season. And I think, generally a playoff team is going to win the Cup. If they said the winner of the NBA Cup would move up one seed, there would be some motivation for that, you know, extra game you're playing. And I don't like the gray courts because it kind of messes with the TV. It looks like the TV, the contrast is messed up. And I think the Warriors, you know, they won a game where they had 19 turnovers. So generally, the Warriors' magic number is like 13. they can win with 14, but above that, generally their chances go down of losing. So the Warriors showed some resilience. What do you guys think? Thanks.
Thanks, Jimmy. You know what about last night's game? You make a good point. The Warriors didn't play well. And you could see that the air was clearly out of the room after all the emotion that was spent on Tuesday night in the return of Klay Thompson. And this is the sign of a good team, Sam. Like, to me, this was more of a barometer and a measuring stick than even that nationally televised game against Boston, even that playoff-esque game against Klay Thompson of the Dallas Cowboys. When you take on a Memphis team and you're not emotionally ready to go, which is understandable, you're not playing at your very best. Steph Curry shot it 27 times against Dallas. He put it up 9 times last night. Off game, I think, for Jonathan Kuminga, Wiggins. You know, Jimmy talked about the turnovers, and yet that game was never in doubt, I don't think, from the outset. To me, that's a statement that you're now clearly part of the top tier of the NBA, that when you're not playing at your best, that you still can dominate, which is, I would call Memphis a good team. They were over 500.
Oh, yeah, I think they're going to be a very good team this year. Very big team, very strong team, and they didn't have Ja last night.
And the Warriors, that game, maybe this is just a personal thought, but was never hanging in the balance. It was never a question from the outset. And that, to me, is a sign of a good team. When you don't, and I don't want to use the term mail it in, but you're not at your very best. But again, when you buy in defensively and the defense is there every night, you can win ugly. And you don't necessarily need Steph to go off. You don't need Draymond to be Draymond, although we'll get into Draymond and his performance last night and getting tossed yet again. And you don't need a big performance from anybody, but again, it's the collective and it's the defense, and it gets you through a game like that in Memphis against a good team. To me, again, that was another indicator that this team is for real.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Last year's team probably does not win that game last night. I mean, there's a lot of games you could point out on the Warriors' schedule so far this year that last year's team probably does not come out and win. I'd point out that Houston game, what was it, 2 weeks ago now, where they had that 31-point lead. They fell apart in the fourth quarter, and they still held on to win in overtime. They probably don't win that. That Celtics game a couple weeks ago, they got off to a horrible start, but the defense was holding the Celtics in check to kind of, you know, give the offense a chance to get back into the game. I'll be honest, Dan, watching that game when the Celtics went up, I think it was like 14-2 or something to start that game. I'm looking at the way they were playing defense on the Celtics, like, oh, yeah, they're going to be able to figure this out. Like, the shot's going to start to fall for the Warriors, and the defense is going to lock the Celtics down. That even against the win on against OKC, when Chet goes down, I mean, they got some help there, but I don't know if they win that game last year. And then to your point, as last night's game, you know, they had a 20-point lead in the fourth quarter that almost evaporated. We saw those leads evaporate all the time last year with this team, and they're not letting that happen this year. So you do see a stronger team mentally, a much, I think, more joyful team this year. And it's almost like you've got like a fresh start for this team after how the last two seasons have gone, where there's just a lot of internal strife and frustration behind the scenes that I believe absolutely was wearing down on the day-to-day product. You don't have that this year. You have a team that's just loose, having fun, and they were able to hold on. And again, the depth absolutely helps. You know, last night, you know, the Buddy Hield revolution keeps going. 7 of 15 shooting, 4 of 8 from 3, 18 points overall. He's just been an absolute revelation for this team. But yeah, last night, that was the sign of a team that is emotionally composed right now, and they easily could have had an emotional letdown after that game on Tuesday night against Klay Thompson and the Mavericks.
Yeah, you brought up last year. Remember that the 41 clutch games? Nobody played in more closer games than that of the Golden State Warriors.
They seemed to blow almost all of them.
Exactly, and I think a lot of that was because of defense or the lack thereof. We continue with the phone calls, 888-957-9570, off to San Francisco, and say hello to Gloria, who joins us this morning. Hey, Gloria.
That's my dog's name.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I think I'm a proponent of the in-play cup. I want some incentive added to the tournament. I like the idea that you guys were talking about the winner of the cup. They can move up in a seed. They don't have to go into the play-in game. I like that. I like that idea. And however we can make that idea become a reality, I know you guys were saying, well, the East wouldn't benefit. Well, if you're over 500, then, well, make, you know, let's find a way to make that happen to where you, the winner wouldn't have to be play into the play-in game.
Yeah.
I'm also a proponent of how the courts look. Aesthetically, it's eye-popping. It makes me think something is happening. There's so many games throughout a year in basketball. This incentive added to the Players' Cup make these otherwise meaningless games, they make them add potential to it being something special. Like, yeah, we've really got to bring our A game.
Gloria, have you had a chance to have you had a chance to look at the other courts around the league the teams are using?
Yeah, now I wasn't a big fan of Houston's. I know that's a whole lot of red.
Yeah.
But
some of the colors just work better. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. I like Boston. I like that metallic green. It really looked, I know, kind of like video game-ish, but I think the players, they buy in a little bit. I know that, you know, older stars, they may not benefit from it as much because we're trying to spare their limbs and, you know, not overtax them. But it makes the Warriors team, all their supporting cast who are younger, it makes them play harder and makes the team as a whole more cohesive.
Thank you, Gloria.
You know, there's points there.
There's somebody in Madison Avenue right now with the NBA saying, Gloria, I want more of you. Because that's exactly what they were thinking about when they decided to change the courts. They're like, let's just make this different so then people see a game, they'll know
something's different.
Something's up. Mm-hmm. And Gloria is, she's part of that consumer base. Yep. So it works. If Gloria is any sort of an indicator. All right, we got to get to a break. Austin, I need you to hang on because we're not going to do that to you. We don't want to put you up against the clock because we know you come strong every Saturday. So we're going to give you a full run on the other side. When we come back, we continue with Warriors This Week. It's Sam Lumman. It's Jersey Ken back producing once again. And Dan Avone, much more right after this.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Technical foul was on Steve Kerr, the head coach. And somebody got, Draymond just got ejected. And so they're going to walk down, shoot another free throw.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
Sam Lubman, Jersey Ken, Dan DeBone, maybe the most uneventful, the least talked about technical and being thrown out of a game for one Draymond Green in some time, maybe ever.
Dan, there used to be a time where if Draymond Green got thrown out of a basketball game, we knew, oh, we're good on content for the next day, maybe the next 2 days. I'll always remember in my earlier days at this station, during that 2021 season, Draymond Green, I'm sure a lot of Warrior fans remember this, when he got thrown out of the end of that Charlotte game with about 8 seconds left in Charlotte. And then
the game they lost.
And then
Beal hit the game winner
right after that. And I remember I came in, I did Warriors This Week the next day. It was with JD and Nick Friedel at the time. And I kid you not, Dan, from 9:01 to our heart out at 11:55, those phone lines were 100% packed. It was all the calls were, "I'm so tired of Draymond," or, "Guys, you got to remember Draymond does this." It was 3 hours of that. And here we are again, a little bit of a different circumstance. The Warriors did win, but Draymond getting kicked out of a game, I feel like part of it, maybe we're just desensitized to it. Part of it is just, it just seems like people aren't as angry about it.
You know why, Sammy? Winning cures all.
It really
bro.
Does.
But I do want to talk
about the magic deodorizer.
We're going to get into Draymond Green because I do find it interesting, and he continues to be somebody that divides the room, and I just find him so fascinating as a player, as a human being. We're going to do a lot more of that when it comes to Draymond and the Warriors' ugly, ugly win over Memphis last night to improve to 10-2 as we welcome you back into Warriors This Week. Once again, to the phone lines, 888-957-9570. Without further ado, let's bring him in. San Jose, the location. Say hello to Austin. What's up, man?
Happy Saturday, guys. Sam and Dan, a great show already. Listen,
thank you, Austin.
A couple things, guys. I'm going to go in a little different direction, guys. And you know, Dan, I always like to throw a little bit something different into the equation. Number one, I like the tournament. I like the tournament, even though you say older guys. Listen, they're basketball players. I remember Thompson's father was asked about, you know, guys playing and resting guys, and I think it was Thompson's dad, or said, "Hey, you know what? These guys are basketball players. That's what they do." So, yeah, guys get hurt, guys, things happen. But at the end of the day, man, you know, that's what they do. So these guys are smart enough to pace themselves anyway, Dan. I don't think you have to worry about Steph and Dre and those guys pacing themselves. These guys are pros; they know what to do. So, yeah, let's bring the tournament. Anything to liven up the NBA, I think we need. I have the league pass, so I can watch a lot of games in the evening. And I think one thing that the NBA needs to be concerned about is maybe a little bit of overexposure, believe it or not. I think there, you know, there's a lot of games to watch. If you try to scroll between games, you can only watch a couple games at a time. So I wonder out loud if they're a little bit overexposed. I think the NBA tournament gives them sort of a collegiate kind of environment, right? People are almost watching a college-type format, which – you could argue is good and bad. So that's something that I think, you know, you guys can talk about. But the other thing is regarding the stars, Dan, the NBA's got a problem right now. They don't have – the problem is too many guys are hurt. If I go to a game like last night where they were in town, OKC, which I want to see Ja Morant. I don't want to see guys that aren't playing. The way Dallas game was so good was everybody played when Dallas was here, and that's kind of rare nowadays where all the stars show up. The pro game for me is different, Dan. I can go watch college basketball. If I want to go see San Jose State or Santa Clara, I can go watch guys, you know, play and hustle, play hard. When I go see a pro game, I go to see the skill level. I want to see the best of the best. I don't want to see guys hurt. I want to pay my money. I want everybody on both sides to be there. I don't want the Warriors to win because somebody on the other side was hurt. No. Those tickets are too expensive. I want to see the best guys on the court. So for me, I get a little disappointed when I watch a game and all the guys aren't there, if that makes sense. The other night when you watch Kyrie's skill level, things he can do that nobody else can do, effortlessly going to the basket. I mean, you saw even Klay Thompson. There was one series where Moses Moody came down the court. Mm-hmm. He had a wide open shot. He was indecisive. What did they do? He missed the shot. Dallas threw the ball back down the court, and Klay didn't even hesitate and shot a three. That reminds you of how great the really good guys are versus the guys that we just watch run up and down the court every day. So for me, it's the difference between watching a team play hard and win and a team that has a high skill level, if that makes sense, guys. I'll keep listening. Thanks.
I hear you. I want to – let's – what he said about the NBA Cup in terms of just, like, not worrying about the minutes. I will say this, Dan. Right now, again, we're only 12 games into the season, but Draymond Green is averaging about 27 minutes per game right now. It's about what he got last year. His career average is about 28 minutes a game, so his minutes per game is down a little bit. But Steph Curry, currently through 9 games, Dan is averaging only 28 minutes a game right now.
The last time,
the last time that Steph played a full season, I'm going to take away that 5-game season where he injured his hand. But the last time Steph played a full season and averaged less than 30 minutes, go all the way back to the 2011-2012 season. He didn't even play a full... He wasn't even a full-time player. Well, he was a full-time player, but he missed a large chunk of that season because of an ankle injury. That's how far back he had to go to find when Steph was averaging under 30 minutes a game. Even so far this season, I think last night was, either the third or fourth time Steph has sat out the fourth quarter so far this year. Remember, it used to happen a lot back in the day. Steph's averaging about 6 minutes per game in the fourth quarter. That's down from 7.6 minutes last year, 7.7 minutes the year prior, and 8.3 minutes per fourth quarter in that 21-22 championship season. So Steph's playing a little bit less this year, which you like to see. Draymond's getting a little less time on his legs this year, which you like to see. So far in the early going, the Warriors' depth is keeping their biggest stars' legs a little bit fresher than they have been in years past.
Oh, no. That's a huge part of it. Not only that, but the injuries, right? D'Anthony Melton goes down, if this is any other year, because I think Steve Kerr intimated last week where he said, I finally have my starting lineup. Remember the beginning of the season? Aside from Steph and Draymond, it was sort of this running joke. If you wanted content, the beginning of the year, you just say, let's play. Who's going to be the starting five for the Golden State Warriors in the 24-25 campaign?
I think they had a stretch of 6 games with 6 different starting lineups, and it's usually only 1 or 2 differences.
And now he felt so comfortable with D'Anthony Melton now at the number 2. And obviously he's got Wiggins, Trayce Jackson-Davis, and Draymond Green as your front line, and Steph at the 1. And you got Jonathan Kuminga, who's very productive now, and it seems as though he's found his slot coming off the bench. And so it all worked. And then all of a sudden, D'Anthony Melton goes down. Now, if this is any other year, you would say, oh, no, that's not good. What are we going to do? You'd spend some time talking about it. But because, again, to your point, because of the depth, not only can you rest guys, but it's the proverbial next man up. D'Anthony Melton's down. That only means that Lindy Waters gets some run. That only means that the next guy in line just moves a step forward.
Yep.
And because you have so many players, whether it's Slow-Mo, whether it's Moses Moody, or it's Kuminga, or it's Pajemski, or it's GP2, the list goes on, you never want injuries. But you can afford to lose a D'Anthony Melton. You can afford to lose a Lindy Waters. And you can still be a productive team. And that's what depth provides. But I think to Austin's point, that it is sort of fascinating in this day and age, in basketball in 2024, where you have guys now that invest in their bodies like they have never done before, where you have nutritionists now who are on the payroll. These guys now, they have dietitians. They work out. You talk about having a gym in your pad. These guys have their personal trainers. There has never been a point in the NBA throughout its entirety where players now are more focused in investing on their bodies and taking care of themselves. Compare that to like the 80s or the 70s or the 90s where dudes would just roll out of bed after, being on a bender
hungover,
the
yeah.
night before and then drop in 25 and then do their thing. Why is it then that we're seeing the rash of injuries and guys are getting injured now more than ever before?
Well, I think part of it is, guys are faster and stronger mm-hmm. than they've ever been before. The level of play is harder than it's ever been before. The pace of play is faster than it's ever been before. So you're putting far more miles on your legs at a far greater intensity than you have been in the past. And then on top of that is just, we think the Warriors are deep. This league is deep. They may not be deep in terms of just like, superstars. There are a lot of superstars, obviously, but the next level of players, the second tier players, the role players, the guys behind the role players, like there's a lot of talent in the league this year. You're not really going against, what was it, the term J.J. Redick had, plumbers and electricians that Wilt Chamberlain was playing against? Like, you got legitimate
Bob
NBA Cousy players.
Threw under the bus.
Yeah, those are J.J.'s words, not mine. Yeah. But you've got so many, just the talent level, it just goes so far deep in this league these days that you're always playing against a guy who can run you. So when you kind of combine all of that together over the course of an 82-game season, yeah, I think you're going to see a lot more wear and tear. And, you know, bodies, you know, they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Ligaments can only hold so much. You know, ligaments don't get bigger. You know, and so you got these dudes like, I'm watching, like, Jaren Jackson Jr. You're watching, yeah, that dude is a massive human being. I remember last year after one of the Grizzlies games, you know, I went and I sat in on Taylor Jenkins' post-game press just because I'm curious what the other coach has to say. And JJJ, he sits down right next to me because he was going to go after coach. And I just look over and this dude's just like an absolute behemoth of a human being. But he doesn't really look like it on TV because he's not like, you know, like fat or anything like that. He's like just built large, like a very large build. That's a lot of man for those ligaments to have to carry around. And so it's just, when you bring all that together, yeah, I can kind of see how some guys' bodies start to break down a little bit more than others.
They have to be the biggest team in the NBA with Aldama, with Jaren Jackson.
Zach Edey. Cavs, pretty big team, too.
The Cavs are big, but they're slim and they're athletic. When I think of Mobley and I think of Allen, I think of guys that are athletes that can get out and shoot threes. When I think of Memphis, I think dudes that are just like,
well, they've always kind of had that.
WWE-esque.
Yeah, they've always had, like, back Adams, when Zach Randolph was there, you know, those big boy teams.
Steven
as well.
Adams, sure.
Yeah, Jones Valanciunas.
Brandon Clark's another guy.
They have an identity in Memphis. They love those big bruiser dudes.
Here's why I think that you're seeing the number of injuries, and Steve Kerr talked about this, and he echoed my sentiment, is that the game has never been played like this before. And I know Charles Barkley and some of those bozos from the 90s will say, oh, these little guys, man, you don't know what it was like when we played. The game was so much better. Uh-uh. Miss me with that, man. This game now is on such a different level in terms of the requirements for an athlete to play and to get run in the NBA. Go pop in a tape from when Charles Barkley was playing. You cross half court, you would throw it into somebody in the post because that's where the game was played, whether it was David Robinson or Olajuwon or Patrick Ewing, and then, you know, they double team and they rotate out of that. But everybody was standing around in the key. Like, you cross the timeline now, you cross the logo, and you got to get out and extend on guys. You got to run guys off the three-point line. You got guys now that just need a crease to get off a three, a sidestep three. So you've got to be out defensively. You've got to get up and down the floor. You can't hide anymore. There are no big fellas that are just going to lumber back into the picture after, you know, the offense is already set and you're going through a play. No, transitional defense is a real thing. I think the wear and tear on these guys and the requirements to be an NBA basketball player at that skill level put so much pressure on, as you talked about before, the joints, the ligaments, whatever. Because, again, the prerequisite to be good and to defend these guys at that level requires so much physically that I think is why you're seeing so many guys go down. The game has never, ever been played at
this level. There's so much more movement these days. I mean, how many miles does Steph Curry run a game? Now imagine you're the guy who has to, you know, stay on that guy. Like, you remember the 2015 finals. I mean, he ran Matthew Dellavedova right into the emergency room. That's, you know, the like how hard it is. So yeah, it's so much easier to build up wear and tear these days because, yeah, guys are stronger, guys are faster, guys are defending you harder, guys are banging into you harder. Like, you know, I don't know if TV always captures it, but the NBA game is an incredibly physical game. You know, guys get knocked around all the place, getting elbows to the face, to the chest, knees hitting you here and there. Like, again, it's just, and then you're doing this for 6 months out of the year, 82 games. Again, for a long time, these injuries are going to build up, especially if you're on one of the bigger guys. I mean, Joel Embiid, that guy's always injured, but that's a lot of body that guy has to carry around. That's why he's having all those foot injuries early on in his career.
Yeah, I was going to chime in here real quick, guys. And think about the big men that are much more athletic nowadays and can shoot outside of the perimeter. I mean, you just said Joel Embiid is one of those guys, even though he's not playing well right now. But Jokic, I mean, the guy's a triple-double machine. You know, he's one of the best passers in the league. I mean, you know, Karl Anthony Towns. You got to worry about big men shooting outside and sidestepping you.
Wemby.
Like, right. And it's just going to get even, it's just getting more like ridiculous when it comes down.
Dan, you're around to see, you know, these guys when they play back in the 80s and 90s. I mean, did you ever see big men shooting threes like this back in the day?
Which lends me to, and I know they do this at the bar, and why not just dig it up right now? Shaquille O'Neal. You know where I'm going with this, right? And I'm one of those guys that just be the best for your era. Like when people say, oh, could Babe Ruth hit today's pitching? Who the hell cares? Babe Ruth played in the 20s. He was the best at his sport. Leave it alone. Shaquille O'Neal, first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the greatest to ever do it. But if Shaquille O'Neal, to Jersey Ken's point, if he was in today's game, is he the same impactful basketball player? Because, again, when you talk about the Joker has a lot of Shaquille O'Neal because he's the one guy who can throw around his girth and be big and get to his spot in the paint. But again, as Jersey Ken points out, he can also step you outside and shoot a three and give you a feathery touch from the mid-range and also can pass like nobody else. He might be the first. It's never happened. He might be the first guy we're looking at. It's going to be a four-time MVP. But I'm just curious, getting back to Shaq, could Shaq play in today's game?
I think he's skilled enough, he's athletic enough, he's big enough that you would definitely be a presence down low. Without the shooting, it would be tough. But where I would be very curious to see is how he keeps up with the pace.
Okay, but if
teams are running so much more these days, like I don't know how effective he would be having to kind of keep up with the high paces, because the NBA game in the 90s was very slow paced.
Half court.
Yeah, it was. I think the fastest paced team in the end of the 90s, they were like 95 possessions a game or something like that was like fast paced back in, you know, the late 90s. Nowadays, like the slowest teams are doing like 105, 110 possessions a game. So it's just a much faster game. And so I'd be kind of curious, you know, Shaq having to, you know, huff and puff up and down that court. Would he be effective? Absolutely. How much? That's where I think the question comes in.
Okay, let me take you back in the day in the NBA Finals in 2016. And so Andrew Bogut, who was part of the Golden State Warriors, and he was an instrumental part of their success. And what did the Cavaliers do? And it was sort of this the way the NBA was headed. They went small and nullified Andrew Bogut, where he wasn't even a factor in the finals because they had to take him off the floor. If I go small, which is what teams like to play five out now, if I go small, what's Shaquille O'Neal going to do? Is Shaquille O'Neal going to extend and chase somebody off the line?
Nope.
Is Shaquille O'Neal going to get outside and watch Evan Mobley from 30 feet from the hoop?
No.
Is he going to get outside and extend on Wembanyama, who wants to take you off the bounce? What is it Shaquille O'Neal is going to do in today's game when I go five small?
I think 90s Shaquille O'Neal, like magic Shaquille O'Neal, could probably do it. But then he's always said, you know, I never took care of myself the way I should have. Like if he had the work ethic, like he said, like Kobe, he goes, I probably would have been a different player. But I think you're right. Lakers Shaquille O'Neal, he's just a big dude. Mm-hmm. He couldn't move side to side or front to back the way, you know, these guys can do it now. But I think Magic Shaq, he was a little more athletic, a little more fit, could probably run up and down. But he would have to take care of himself.
And then again,
and develop a shot, too.
You think about spacing, right? Like we always talk about, and you can play Zach Edey to a certain degree, but it's about spacing because, you know, where are you going to stick Shaq? Like he's going to be in one spot, and you know where that spot's going to be. I think it's fascinating as to where the game is at right now. But again, it's so nonsensical because he doesn't play today. And when he did play, he was the best to do it, and we should just leave it at that. But for whatever reason,
it's
we like to go there.
Completely different eras. That's why I think it's just I look at the pace. I always just come back to the pace and just how much faster the game has gotten. Those guys played in a much slower NBA that I think was just better for their skill sets. I mean, there's a reason why there are no centers out there today that are close to the size of Shaquille O'Neal. I mean, Zach Edey is one of the bigger dudes out there, you know, at 7'3", you know.
The big maple.
300 pounds. They have him listed at 299, but that just feels like they're doing him a solid to not put a three there on that weight. But he does not look like a 300-pound dude. Like, he is big, he is long, and he can move. That does not look like how a 300-pound man should look. But yet, the definition of what a 300-pound man is in the NBA is very different than what it was, you know, 25 years ago.
Speaking of 25 years ago and Shaquille O'Neal in the center position and how it's changed over the years, did you happen to watch the ESPN game prior to that of the Golden State Warriors in Memphis? It was San Antonio and the Lakers.
I did. I had it. Yeah, I'm one of those guys. I'm doing stuff around the house while I got the game on in the background. So, you know, I did have it on for a little bit. I saw a little, I mean, I love watching Wemby. He is.
Well, that's my point. Wemby can do a lot, but he has no idea how to post up. They couldn't even get him the ball in the post. He was getting rooted out by guys half his size. I mean, he had no idea. Austin Reeves was taking him out of the paint, and he just does not have any idea how to play with his back.
He's like, what, 20 years old right now?
No, he's going to be remarkable.
Yeah, it's still a long way to go. But
there's got to be some interior. He's the complete opposite.
Yeah.
He's a guy who just wants to take you off the bounce and cross you up or step out and shoot a three, which is good. But you're also 7'5" or 7'4". I don't know. But like,
it's just you can't count on your height to get those rebounds. He's going to have to fill out his body a little bit. I mean, remember when Anthony Davis first came into the league and he kind of just looked like a really tall Urkel? And now he's just this absolute behemoth of a man.
He always had big shoulders. Though.
He was big, but he's really filled out a lot since he first came into the league. I mean, he was very lanky and gangly kind of back when he was at Kentucky. And since then, you know, he's gotten far more filled out. The shoulders gotten a little bit more broader, a lot more solid there. So I think when Wemby, once you start putting a little bit more size on him, a little bit more weight, a little bit more durability there, he's going to become an absolute just terror of a player.
No, he's having somewhat of a sophomore slump because of the expectations, and I think the bar was so high for him this year. But he does have to play in the paint at some point. Somebody's just got to tell him, look, I know you like to be outside, and I know you can shoot it, and it's remarkable because we've never seen a guy do what it is that you do with the handle and everything. But we also, as long as this game is about a hoop that's 10 feet from the ground, and the object is to put the ball in the hoop, and you're this big, we need you to rim protect a little bit, and we need you to muck it up a little bit.
Yeah, not everyone can just shoot threes.
And look at Evan Mobley and the Joker. They're two guys. The reason why Cleveland, I think, is legit is that there's balance, is that you have an interior game. But again, to Ken's point, is that you have to be able to do both, like mm-hmm. the Joker, who is, to me, the quintessential center of today's game, because he can go outside and he can shoot a three, and he can beat you in so many different ways, and then he'll take advantage of you if he feels as though he has the height advantage, and he'll get to his spots on the interior. Right now, Wembanyama, like a lot of foreign players, like a lot of European players, wants to play facing the hoop. And at some point, just get down, stick your narrow butt on the dots, take a lob pass from Chris Paul, and be comfortable with a jump hook or a little turnaround Jimmy from 6 feet. Just have that be part of your bag. And he can't even establish himself. He can't even hold ground down there. And I saw successive possessions where they tried to. And the other thing is, here's another lost art, the entry pass into the post. It sounds really easy, right? You just stick your hand up if you're a guy who's 7'6", you give him a target, and you're like, all right, let me throw it into him. And watching Devin Vassell or whomever, the Kelvin Johnsons of the world, just trying to throw an entry pass into the post, they had no idea how to do it. They don't know
the basic fundamentals.
It really is. It's sort of those fundamentals, as we talk about Shaq and basketball in the 1990s, have really been lost in a lot of players.
Yeah.
And I think if you have a player like that that's going to post up, well, then you got to get back to basketball 101. All right. I do want to talk about basketball today and one Draymond Green. I know you have something to say. I clearly have something to say. Jersey Ken, you want to chime in on Draymond Green? I'm sure he does. We'll do all that and much more. We continue on Warriors This Week right after this.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this?
because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.